I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you very much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are going to be talking today with a couple who are here in Santa Barbara sharing their music, their vision, their love, their light, and they are Tina Malia.
Paint yourself a rainbow with the sky. When it comes to pierce your heart, let it overflow.
And Guru Ganesha Singh.
I believe in one God, a divine nature of us all. I believe in one God, a divine nature of us all. Well, you can trust that one God or not, that's your call. Going on that I can't explain. There's a lot going down that I can't explain. Well, you can get stressed out or not, it's all the same.
I want to welcome both of you to the program as well as to Santa Barbara.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Richard.
You are musicians, but even more so, I've had an opportunity to go to both of your websites and not only listen to your music, but you are also helping to support a particular group, if you will, foundation. And if you could, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourselves, the music that you provide that people will be able to listen to.
Well, the music that we're doing for this tour, for the Song of the Soul tour, is a combination of music from all over the world, different traditions, different spiritual traditions, different indigenous traditions, and some in English original songs. And we just are, you know, wanting to bring different sacred music from around the world into one night of music, and just to kind of show people that it's all one. We're all one. We're all doing the same thing. We're all the same. We're all the same humans. And we want to express that love through music.
And you're on a West Coast tour, basically, up and down the California, Oregon, Washington coast, putting on concerts and so forth, correct?
Correct.
And are you planning on traveling other parts of this country over the next year or so, or even globally?
We are. We're planning an East Coast tour in the fall, and then we're planning on going to Europe and South America and potentially beyond in 2012.
Mm-hmm. And Guru, how about yourself? And by the way, how should I address you?
Well, Guru is a lot of pressure, you know. So.
Oracle doesn't work.
Ganesh is fine.
Ganesh, all right. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your music. I read a little bit about your history, and you go back to, 1973 with some transforming events.
Well, you know, I was born in 1950, and I was a child of the 60s, and, you know, so I have a lot of influence in my music from the great artists of the 60s, you know, Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead and Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton. And then also of last 6-7 years, I've, you know, really dived deeply into classical Indian raga. So, you know, it's kind of a fusion of East and West, you know, blues, jazz, rock, classical Indian raga, kirtan, you know. Now with Tina too, Tina is very, very versatile, you know, and she, you know, she does devotional music, she does pop, she does electronica. So it's really a magnificent stretch for me musically. And it's a real celebration of our, you know, oneness. And because we're you know, singing the sacred words of many different spiritual paths and traditions, but we were just having a blast. The concerts are really fun.
Now, is this sort of your first nationwide tour, so to speak, or have you been traveling and touring for years?
We've been traveling and touring separately. Guru Ganesha has traveled for many, many years with a woman named Sanatam Kaur, and I've traveled myself in different incarnations of bands under Tina Malia, but this is our first time with this collaboration and this group of musicians that we're working with, which is just a world-class group of very talented musicians.
Now, I know that both of you have your own separate websites, mm-hmm. and also you appear on one website together, specifically promoting this tour. Mm-hmm. Your website is?
Mine is tinamalia.com.
And Guru?
GuruGanesha.com.
And we can go there and we can listen to your music. Mm-hmm. We can find out more about you and the work you're doing, in particular with a foundation, which I was absolutely amazed at and very much intrigued by. Can you tell us a little bit about this foundation of these 13 indigenous grandmothers?
You know, this is really Tina's inspiration, so I'll let her speak to it.
Well, it's 13 grandmothers from all over the world, different countries, a lot of them from varying indigenous traditions, and who really have a dedication to not only preserving the traditions from around the world, but coming together and uniting as these elder women to keep these ways alive, you know, everything from medicinal plants to, you know, just creating sustainable structures and everything in between, growing food, just to keep our planet alive and thriving, and in ways that in their time, they actually grew up doing that and have seen the Industrial Revolution come in and wipe out a lot of these traditions, a lot of cultures, and that they've actually seen it with their own eyes and have kept these traditions. So they've banded together to try to teach the world and give their love in the best way that they can. And it's so aligned with what we're doing as far as bringing, you know, different spiritual teachings from different cultures and seeing where we can all meet and teach each other and help each other. So we chose to align with them because it's pretty much exactly what we're trying to do with our tour.
Have you met these women?
I have had the opportunity to meet maybe 4 out of 13 of them, and they're just stunning. They're just amazing. I've had the chance to speak to a couple of them on the phone, and I've just been in tears as soon as I hear their voices. They're so rich and soulful, these women.
Now, I understand there is a vision or prophecy that surrounds these 13 women. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it's, you know, I can't remember the exact person or the exact prophecy, but there was a prophecy that at this time 13 grandmothers would come together, and that would be when that happened, they would come together, and that would be the beginning of this next age that would you know, be bringing love and light. I mean, it's, of course it exists here, but we're in a pretty challenging time on the planet, and it was prophesized that when these women came together, that would be a mark of a new time that would be bringing peace back to the planet.
Now, I remember listening to some of the videos online of these 13 women, and it was described that one of these grandmothers was given, as a child, 13 eagle feathers and 13 stones, and was told, you are going to be part of this Council of 13, etc. Are you familiar with this story, and can you share a little more on that?
Well, it was one of the women's grandmothers, and exactly like you said, she gave her granddaughter, I think she was really young, like 9 or 10 or something, and she gave her these gifts and said, in your lifetime, you will be part of this Council of 13 grandmothers, and here are these gifts when that comes together, you are to give each of these women these gifts, and then that will unite you all. And so she held them for her whole lifetime, for how many years? 70, 80 years. And, you know, just kind of waiting for that moment. And then, alas, it came. And she said she just was crying and crying and crying and so grateful because her grandmother was correct. She had the insight, and she saw, and she knew. And, yeah.
Now, these 13 women have come together, these grandmothers, I guess I should refer to them. I've even, because I've done a little research years gone by in terms of what's referred to as a crone, and that these women would fall under that category, that not old crones in terms of old crotchety women that they're mean and ornery, but that is a title, if you will, of wisdom and honor, that they have something to offer.
Well, you know, there's no love on this earth like the love of a mother and the love of a grandmother. And these women carry such wisdom. And, you know, we're moving into the age of Aquarius, and it's the age of the divine goddess. And it's a time where if we really embrace the wisdom of the divine mother, the grandmother, then she will guide us to that, you know, worldwide enduring peace that we've really all been longing for and praying for.
I want to shift a little bit and talk about your music. You both have been performing individually for many years. Mm-hmm. You came together under what circumstances, and how has the blending changed you? Who wants to start?
I can speak to that. I've been, for the last 12 years, I've been touring with this wonderful devotional artist, a woman named Sanatam Kaur. And we met Tina at a festival in Auburn, California, about 8 years ago. And several people said, wow, Tina Malia's here. And Sanatam and Tina need to meet each other and need to sing together. And as it turned out, we were fortunate enough to be introduced to Tina. And it turned out that Tina was a huge fan of Sanatam's music and knew all the songs and knew all the harmony parts. So we thought, well, we should definitely have Tina sing one song with us. So during the sound check for our performance at the festival, we invited Tina, and Sanatam and Tina sang together. And their voices just blended together for me as the guitarist. And, you know, I felt like I had died and gone into the, you know, and was hearing the music of the spheres, you know, the ethers. And so then we ended up saying, well, you can't just sing on the one song. We had her sing the entire set with us. And then as of about a couple of years ago, Sanatam recently, 5 years ago, got married, has a little 2.5-year-old, wanted to spend a little bit more time with, you know, family, and has cut back on how many concerts that we were doing. I'm a bit of a touring junkie. And then I was thinking, God, I want to put another band together. And I was thinking, Tina Malia, could I somehow persuade someone of her caliber, you know, to co-headline? So I called her up, and I, you know, much to my, you know, delight and amazement, she was very interested. So together, and we aligned ourselves, we got together, we played together, and found that the synergy was great. It was even better than we expected. And then together we decided on, you know, who we wanted, you know, to support us musically. And we selected three gentlemen who are just amazing world-class musicians. And we weren't quite sure what was going to happen with the music, but intuitively I think we both knew it was going to be good, but it's way better than we even expected. And it would be hard to put into words, but are you going to stay for the concert tonight?
I have another engagement that I have to attend.
Well, Ron will send you some video of what's been happening. But the responses so far from people who are like, not sure, gee, Gurganesha and Tina Malia together, we have no idea what that's going to be like because they're very different mm-hmm. artists. But the responses have been astounding. And so we're having a blast because we're both kind of stretching into, you know, new parts of our musical selves that we wouldn't have otherwise. Mm-hmm. And she's phenomenal. She's one of the greatest female vocalists, I think, on earth today, and people will start to realize more and more as we get this out there.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question, Tina. How does what he has just said about you, how does that make you feel? Where does that put you?
Where does that put me? Well, you know, my dedication is solely to the music always. That's my sole focus on planet Earth at this moment is to create the greatest musical experience that I can, that we can as a group, and just really create something for everyone in our shows. And so it makes me feel fantastic. Thank you, Guru Ganesha.
When the two of you began to collaborate, and I mean, you've expressed your admiration for the type of music that the two of you now create. Mm-hmm. You write your own music, both the notes as well as the words?
Well, I write for my music. I write most of the music and some of the words, but a lot of the words are from our divine poetry, from you know, mystics from the Sikh tradition, from the Sufi tradition, from some of my music is literally gospel. Mm-hmm. And so I don't write that many lyrics because there's so much divine poetry that's been written to. I get inspired to put music to that divine poetry.
Tina?
I write a lot of original music in English, and then I love singing in different languages. And similarly to Guru Ganesha, I've collected, I like to say, songs from all over the world. Most of them sacred songs in Hebrew and Sanskrit, some music in Spanish and Portuguese, and kind of whatever I can get my hands on. Now I have some Gurmukhi under my belt, which I love singing.
That's great.
And but I do have a whole sort of litany of music in English. It's all original compositions.
So this question to the two of you, and I'll start with you, Tina. What is it that inspires you to create this music?
Well, music is really, well, first of all, I mean, I was doing music in the womb. My mother was a concert pianist and opera singer, and she was literally playing me music while I was in her belly. And then I grew up literally, again, underneath a grand piano while my mother practiced all day. So music has been just like eating and sleeping for me pretty much every single day of my life. So it's not even that anything inspires me to do it. It's that I don't think I could do anything else. I feel lost and sad and alone when I don't have music as part of my daily life and my daily practice. So my inspiration is just like breathing for me, honestly, doing music. And as far as my inspiration for writing and learning music, I really love creating and learning music that's very uplifting, particularly in this day and age that we live in. I find that, you know, there's everything out there, and there's music kind of based on every subject. You know, you can find it. But I really like to create music that's really uplifting for people, that creates a space where they feel they can relax, they feel like they can open up, they feel like they can be themselves, and maybe touch a part of their hearts and their souls that they don't normally in their just sort of daily busy life. So that's the music that I'm inspired to listen to, and therefore that's the music that I'm inspired to create as well.
And Ganesha, what about you?
Well, I come from a family of entertainers. My mother and father were entertainers. My father traveled with Bob Hope during World War II on the USO, and they gave shows all over the place. He sang, he danced, he told jokes. My mother was a dancer. And at age eight, the Ed Sullivan Show, which was the big variety show in the 50s and 60s, since where the Beatles came and became famous through that show on Sunday evening. The studio guitar player for that show was my cousin. And they would pan the band every now and then, and my father would jump up and say, "That's your cousin, High White." So at age eight, he took me to visit him in New York. He took me down into the basement, and there's all these beautiful guitars hanging from hooks. And my cousin, High White, who was like 20 years older than me, maybe 25 years older than me, he said, "Pick one." I looked all around, and I pointed at this semi-hollow-body Gibson, beautiful sunburst kind of, finish. And I pointed at him, and he said, "You would pick the most expensive guitar down here." He takes it off the hook, hands it me. He says, "It's yours. Learn how to play it." And I took that as a hookah, meaning order from the divine. And my mother did, too. She said, "Well, your cousin and I give you this $3,000 guitar." She got me lessons right away. And for 5 years, you know, I learned how to play the guitar from the ground up, you know, using both hands, learning it right. I had an Italian taskmaster teacher who, like, really cracked the whip. And I'm very grateful. At the time, I didn't like it very much. But I'm very grateful because, you know, he taught me how to read music, how to play with, you know, properly, you know, fingers at the right frets, using both hands the right way. And then I put it away to play baseball, and then the Beatles came to America, the music of the 60s, just music that, you know, you're talking about music, why music? Well, nothing touched my heart like music in my life, nothing. Just totally bypassed the intellect, touched the heart. And so, you know, I just remember in college just staying up all night, night after night after night, not interested in studies, just playing the guitar along with my favorite artists at the time, mainly playing along with the Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead in college. And then, so that's how it happened for me. And, you know, I just had a rock and roll band that toured with the Allman Brothers in the late 60s, early 70s. And then got to a point, though, where I just had to get out of that whole drug scene and was looking for a way to feel uplifted without all the chemistry that all the rock and roll musicians were using. And found a Kundalini yoga and a teacher from India named Yogi Bhajan, and got on a spiritual path. But the music was he was a big advocate of using music even for the yoga path. You know, we'd every yoga class, there'd be music going on, there'd be music at the end, we'd all sing together mantras, chants, sacred songs, in a very joyful, celebratory way, you know. And that's kind of led up to, and you know, at a certain point I just decided, you know, I that's all I wanted to do. And started a record label, started recording and meeting amazing devotional music artists like, you know, Tina Malia.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Oh, this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you so much for staying with us as we are talking with Tina Malia and Guru Ganesha Singh.
Many things cross your mind. Take it easy, you got the time. Go within and you might find peace of soul and of mind.
Tina, tell me about your spiritual path.
You know, I was raised fairly traditionally, mainstream America, suburbs. My parents are, you know, both Christian based religion. And when I was about 15, I just had this burning desire to find out all about not only different kinds of spirituality, but different kinds of music and just different paths. I, of course, you know, I was a teenager just becoming a young woman, and I wanted to know about everything. So I started reading about Hinduism and paganism and Buddhism and Judaism and Native American spirituality and, you know, everything I could get my hands on, really. And then that kind of coupled itself into music as well. And then, like I said, you know, learning different music from these traditions. And so music and spirituality to me are kind of the same thing, because as Guru Ganesha mentioned before, you know, for us as musicians, there's really no other way for me to get higher, literally, mm-hmm. You know, feel a complete sense of total elation and surrender than when I'm doing music. And there is a quality to music that is focalized in touching the higher realms that also does something particular. Now, I'm just going to start by saying I love all kinds of music. I love country music. I love really intense electronic music. I love pop music. I love all kinds of music. I enjoy them all. But there's a quality to what we're going to refer to as devotional music, mm-hmm. that for me personally, I can only speak from my own experience, just has this next sort of level of a quality of it bringing a sense of elation and peace and just total joy and surrender. So because I was seeking all of these, you know, seeking and trying to figure out all of these, you know, which path I wanted to take, it kind of naturally led me to devotional music. And so I would say that's really my spiritual path is through music and through devotional music, and now at this stage it's really through sharing that is part of my path also. It's not only just doing it for myself and chanting and what have you, learning all this music, but part of the joy of my spiritual path is also giving that to other people and letting other people experience that and learn about that. That's equally as that brings me an equal sense, if not more, joy and elation while doing the music.
And Ganesha, tell me about the pre-Sufi life.
You mean
from a spiritual standpoint? In other words, where were you coming from if you want to even use the word religiously.
Oh, yeah, well, my father was Russian Jewish. My mother was Irish Catholic. I like to joke, this is what happens when you mix a Jew and a Catholic, you know. They warned you about that. And, you know, they never quite agreed on how to raise me. I mean, my father's family was more predominant in my life, so I ended up in synagogue a little bit more than I did in church. But my mother always said, son, when you're 18, wink, wink, you can choose your own path in life. So, well, when I was 18 and 19, well, first off, at 18, I was at Woodstock. And then, you know, then I'm in a rock and roll band. And then I met this guru from India, and I'm practicing yoga and meditation every day and feeling, wow. I mean, the Kundalini yoga that Yogi Bhajan taught got me as high as any, you know, psychedelic drug did. So I gave up all the drugs and everything. And at age 22, I kind of embraced the Sikh path, which and Yogi Bhajan, who happened to be a Sikh from northern, and like the Prime Minister of India is of the Sikh religion, didn't come here to teach religion. He came here, he was a master of Kundalini yoga and meditation, but he happened to be of the Sikh religion. I got interested in it. It preaches oneness, you know, and it comes out of a whole anti-caste system movement that started in India 400 or 500 years ago. And he was like the leader of that, saying, that, hey, there's no high, no low. We're all one. And he forced kings to sit with beggars and eat it, you know, together on the floor. And I mean, it was just very inspiring, the whole teachings. So at 22, I donned a turban and started to grow a little beard, and I went home. And my mother freaked out when she saw me, you know. I said, Ma, I thought you said when I was 18 I could choose my own path. She said, well, I didn't mean this. She said, I said, well, what did you mean? She said, well, I thought you'd be a Catholic. I said, well, why did you think I would be a Catholic? You know, you were in a convent as a kid. You complained about the nuns. You've been complaining about the church my entire life, right on up to the Pope. Mm. She said, yeah, but it's better than anything else. So that's how I, you know, that was my background. But then she, you know, 2 years later, I came home from for Thanksgiving meal. And she's all dressed in white with a white kind of like Gloria Swanson turban, the movie star, with a leg, an emerald up there. Because, you know, we at the time, we were all wearing white flowing clothes and everything and turbans. And I said, Ma, what's happening? She says, I said, did you become a Sikh? She said, no. I just wanted to pay tribute to your path. And I said, really? And she had made this all vegetarian meal, tofu, turkey and everything. Mm-hmm. I said, really? And I said, why? She said, well, it got you off drugs, you know? And then I said to her, I said, well, how did you know I was on drugs? She said, a mother always knows.
That must have been astounding. And mothers always seem to surprise us, mine included, has made comments to me about my life and past when we're sitting chatting on over the phone.
That's right.
So yeah, mothers are quite astounding. As a matter of fact, that kind of leads me, we're going to kind of go back to the 13 grandmothers in terms of the whole matriarchal aspect. Now, I was born and raised in a family of 8, 4 sisters, 2 older, 2 younger, and of course the mother. And then it was me and my brother and my dad who were outnumbered.
Right.
And after seeing these videos and learning more about these women, and I've said this before, I would have no problem living in a matriarchal mm-hmm. society. And I asked this question, and I kind of put this to the two of you. Isn't it sort of true, and I don't want to be stereotypical, I sort of mean this in a serious sense, that women have sort of been controlling and calling the shots in our civilization and families and societies for generations anyway? I mean, the stereotypical thing is, you know, that a woman will give a man a look. If it's the husband, she looks at him a certain way and he's okay, kind of thing. But she's always been the nurturer, the supporter, the encourager, and so forth. So how do these 13 women, or what role do you see them playing in our present and future?
Well, I hope that they play a great role in our present and our future. And the reason for that is, you know, as much as that is true, what you say that, you know, women on some level, they have great influence, let's say, over men. On the other hand, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of fairly atrocious things happening in the world right now that I'm not even going to get into, but war being the least of them. And I feel like women just have we naturally have kind of a more of a peaceful sort of nurturing. Mm-hmm. It's easier for us, I feel, to see things as a whole, to care about everyone, to kind of find that place of compassion for pretty much any being, because that's what a mother does. So I feel like that's what the 13 grandmothers, that's what they represent. That's what they're really trying to bring back into the world. And, you know, not so much a matriarchal society as much as just bringing the energy of the matriarch, bringing the energy of the feminine, giving it a bit more of a bigger presence than there is right now. Because as much as I would love to believe that women have a bit more of an influence on things, I feel that if we really delved deep, it's probably a little bit more out of balance the other direction in that way right now. Mm-hmm. So my personal hope for the grandmothers, for all mothers, for all daughters, for all the women is that, you know, through this time that all of us can step up a little bit more into that place and know our strength and our power and our not in a strength and a power in an intense, controlling, violent way, but our power within the gentleness, you know, and what that could really do to help our planet, mm-hmm. really.
What are your impressions?
Well, you know, men have been the primary political leaders for many centuries, and we certainly made a mess of that. And I think if you could visualize, a table with where the majority of the leaders, political leaders, were women, and there was a discussion about, what do we do with the planet as is right now? I think it would be very unlikely that the decision would be to drop more bombs on each other, you know, because no one understands the pain. When a child is killed or maimed by a bomb, no one understands that pain like a mother. Mm-hmm. Certainly no man. I mean, we're in pain if our child is killed or hurt, but the mother has, there's a depth of the agony that she feels, you know, that no man even understands. It's like childbirth too. So I just think we need more of that experience and wisdom helping to shape where this whole planet is going, you know. And I think 13 grandmothers are really, you know, potentially could be help leading that charge, you know.
Well, we're certainly on board in that respect, that changes need to be made and we need to be part of those changes as well. I want to ask the two of you, as we are, and we've been in this process of transition, I know that you're both familiar with a lot of the writings, the ancient wisdom teachings, mm-hmm. Regardless of what the tradition is, that we are in this time hurtling headlong into a very uncertain future. And I don't necessarily mean in terms of we take a look at our history and our past as human beings and what we've been doing to one another, but just in terms of the universal transition that they say we're going through. Can the two of you give us your impressions on where we are and where you see us going as a people?
Well, one of the great teachings that I kind of like to hold in my mind a lot is within the Hindu tradition, and that there's four cycles. I call them four yugas. And the one that we're in right now is called the Kali Yuga. Mm-hmm. And it's really, you can, if you looked at it, let's say even like the cycles of the moon, it's basically the cycle of light and dark, you know. So the Kali Yuga, and I can't remember, I apologize, I don't have my exact facts straight, but it's a long time, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like 100,000 mm-hmm. years or something per yuga. So according to those traditions, we're at the end of the Kali Yuga, which is the dark cycle, where mm-hmm. there's the least light. And we're entering now into the Satya Yuga, which is the time of truth and of trust. Mm-hmm. So you know, of course, I love to believe that that's true. and it actually is very comforting in moments, you know, when you see what's going on in the world and you can just take a step back and be like, okay, this is just the Kali Yuga. It's crazy right now, but we're, you know, if these traditions, if these ancient writings and traditions are correct, then naturally, just by the flow of the universe, just by the flow of creation, we are going to enter into this next cycle of the Satya Yuga. So that's kind of how mm-hmm. I like to look at things.
Well, it's, you know, in the late 60s, they started singing about it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. So we've been in this cusp period between the Kali Yuga and the age of Aquarius, or Satya Yuga. And a number of great teachers have said that the Aquarian age officially begins 11-11-11, November 11th, 2011. In fact, there's huge celebrations being planned in India mm-hmm. where people are coming from all over the world to come and celebrate the actual official beginning of the age of Aquarius. The belief is, and I deeply believe this, that in the age of Aquarius, it's the age where consciousness rules, and that people of consciousness naturally move into positions of leadership. By consciousness, I mean people who see God in all, mm-hmm. and people who look around and they see we're all divine, and people who are human and have an ego and have, you know, feelings of separateness and everything, but they subjugate their ego to serve the higher consciousness, so that the mindset is, thy will be done. Will what I'm doing serve the greater good, mm-hmm. not just my individual good? And, you know, so it is like Tina said, that it's very comforting. You know, if you have that belief, it's very comforting to feel like the whole planet and all 7 billion of us are kind of moving into that age. Mm-hmm. And whether it's true or not, maybe if enough of us believe it, it'll happen.
Well, they do say we do create our own realities.
That's right.
When you're on stage performing, or maybe even in studio recording, do you get into, the only word I can think of at the moment is the zone, as it were? It's like you talked about it being the highest high that you could ever get. Both of you have spoken of that. Is that the feeling that you have when you're performing, when you have this music that's emanating from you? In your case, it's coming from your voice. And by the way, do you sing?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
I sing. Deepest expression of my soul is through my guitar, mm-hmm. but I use my voice as part of it. I mean, especially on some of the material that I've written, I sing. But I've invited Tina in to take a major vocal role in all of my songs too, because her voice is such an amazing mm-hmm. instrument. But you know, so I sing through my guitar, maybe even more than through my voice.
And you get into that space, that zone, I call it the flow. The flow. Okay.
You know, it's where the intellect shuts down. But, you know, it's like I used to be kind of a jammer. And so there's a difference between just going into this state where you're just kind of by yourself and mm-hmm. you're in it, but maybe not anybody else is in it, and maybe the audience isn't in it. And Tina's been really helping me to get into this space where I'm fully connected to the other band members and the audience and can still get into that flow, you know. So that's I think very Aquarian.
How about you, the flow?
Definitely. I mean, music is such a natural part of what I do, but I actually have to say that it's something that I have to do consciously, particularly when performing, because just like anything else, you know, you can be driving a car and, you know, thinking about what you're going to eat for lunch, or you can be driving a car and thinking about whatever you want to, you know. And so for me, music is the same way. I can be on stage and I can be singing and I can be thinking about this or that, or I can be consciously choosing to focus on the lyrics that I'm singing, the mantras that I'm singing. And that's really, you know, after years and years of performing, that's the space that I'm in more and more and more and more, regardless of what's going on in my life. The second I hit that stage, I'm really there for my audience. I mean, I am there for them, and I want them to get every every drop of that expression, of that feeling that I have experienced with each of those songs while either writing them or learning them. I want them to feel that same experience. So I consciously focus myself to go back into that and emanate that, really. And of course, by doing that, I once again get to experience that. I mean, that's why we're tour junkies, is because it's not only do we get to experience that ourselves night after night after night, that elation, but we also get to, you know, hopefully if it's a good night, at least have one other person touch that with us. And yeah. there's just really nothing, there's nothing greater than to watch another person's soul light up. Really, there's just not, there's no greater gift as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And then it becomes a co-formance instead of a performance.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, which is what we're really striving for. We could say, oh, tonight is a co-formance rather than a performance, but it's when it happens, when somebody's soul lights up, and then it starts changing the way we play, too. And when sometimes people are moved to dance, and that really affects everybody and change. It gives us inspiration, you know. So it's kind of a kind of a divine lovemaking where you have multiple people able to participate together.
Mm. Let me ask you before we wrap up the program, what do you want to achieve with your music? Because you've shared what you achieve in an audience situation, but in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture, mm-hmm. what is it that you'd like to achieve with the music that you create?
Well, you know, it's really easy as a musician, particularly as a musician in the United States, to have grandiose visions of fame and fortune. It's right there. But for me personally, and I know this might sound a little cheesy, but it's absolutely true. I mean, well, I'm an Aquarius for starters. And what that means to me is that I am just so present. I am so wherever I'm at, with any city I'm at, with whoever I'm with. I mean, I am just so right there. And this question is very closely linked to what I just said before. And I really mean it when I say that if one person after my show, after our show, is lit up by what I do, or one person emails me and says, you know, I recently got an email of a woman who said she was just about to commit suicide. She'd given everything away. She had given up her house. She was doing it very methodically. And then someone gave her one of my albums, and she listened to that over and over again, and that led her to decide to give it one more try and stay here on the planet. I mean, that to me is greater than any fame or fortune that I could ever have. Mm-hmm. So as far as my grandiose plans, all I can say is I'm here in service. I love what I do, and my grandiose plan is just to sing and sing and sing and sing and sing and sing as much as I can. And whatever ears that hits, whatever heart that hits, that's what I want to do. That's mm-hmm. what I want to do for as long as I possibly can. And as far as what that means in the big scheme, well, that's not for me to decide. There's a greater mm-hmm. plan out there, and I'm just going to try to listen and be present every step of the way.
Well, like Tina, I mean, my prayer every day is Thy will be done. But the message I've been getting is, and because I'm also a businessman as well as a musician, and the message I've been getting is have a big vision and have a big plan for this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we're putting together a vision. We've got some major financial backing that's just about in place because people are very inspired by what we're doing. And, you know, so we're, you know, planning to make a long-term commitment, give some security to us and the other musicians, and really do this on a grand scale. And we'll see, then we'll find out if that's the divine plan. But so far we've been, you know, taking the few steps. And sometimes when you really commit to doing something and doing it right and doing it at all levels at the caliber that it deserves, then the universe becomes the wind at your back. And that's the clear message I've been getting, even from the business side. So there's going to be a huge amount of marketing muscle behind the Song of the Soul tour. And moving into the future. And that's exciting, And I'm not attached that we'd be playing in arenas and stadiums, but I won't be surprised.
Mm-hmm. And finally, who is Tina Malia?
I am just a girl. I'm just human. I'm as human as can be, just like everybody else. And that's what I want to convey over and over again, is just I'm just like you. I'm eat and sleep and I get moody and I'm, like new shoes. And I also love. I'm just a real lover and I have such a beautiful life. I have so much love around me and I want to spread that as big and wide as I possibly can through my favorite way, which is music.
And who is Guru Ganesha Singh?
Well, like I just said, more and more, the older I get, more my prayers have been reduced down to one, which is thy will be done, thy will be done. And what that means to me is that I believe each of us has kind of a divine self. And so I'm really trying to surrender more and more every day to be whatever that divine self wants me to be, and to spend more and more time getting in touch with that voice. Because, I have like everybody else, I have a committee up here, about 17, 18 different voices.
That few.
Yeah, that few. Oh, you have one too. Huh? And, more and more my spiritual practice has evolved to where my focus is on really trying to, make dial in that, highest voice. Mm-hmm. So that I can really hear it. It's constantly, it's constantly broadcasting wisdom and guidance. And the more I attune myself to that channel, that frequency, the better everything becomes. That's what guided me to work with Tina. I mean, three or four mornings in a row, I was praying, and Tina literally just came into my consciousness, and, I was praying about, okay, now that, my other musical partner is reducing the amount of music and amount of touring that she's doing, what should I do next? And so I feel that this is a manifestation of that prayer.
Well, I want to thank the two of you for manifesting and sharing with us your time, and I know you're getting ready to begin your concert this evening. And it's just a great pleasure to have spent this time with you.
Likewise. Thank you all so much.
And yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would be in trouble if I didn't say this. Songofthesoultour.com. Please come out and celebrate with us.
By the way, songofthesoultour.com also links to the two of you, your websites, your individual websites.
Yes.
And Tina Malia and Guru Ganesha Singh, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And you asked us great questions. We're very grateful.
Well, thank you. I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday, love to all.